intro.
I am so sick of the media dictating the terms of the narrative in this country. I'm so sick of having to be apologetic for who I am. I'm so sick of people in middle America being called a flyover country or slope-headed.
Conservative teabaggers.
It's going to be teabagging day.
It's hard to talk when you're teabagging. Appreciate it very much.
It's so funny because the teabaggers, the one thing they hate is when you call them racist.
If racism is not the whole of the Tea Party, it is in its heart.
The hatred that Timothy McVeigh, that he had. There are plenty of people like that right now.
Lots of them.
I think you get the general tenor of this. It's anti-government, since this is highly promoted by the right-wing conservative network, Fox.
The left pits people against each other. Divide and conquer is the strategy. I don't want to live in that world. It is the exact opposite of E Pluribus Unum. And what the left has stood for with political correctness is to try and get those with whom they disagree to shut up. And the Tea Party movement and Sarah Palin and Michelle Bachmann and Alan West and all the people that have gone out there against the mainstream media and said, you're going to call us racist? You're going to call us potential Timothy McVeighs? Fuck you. War.
Good morning. Good morning and welcome to Road Warrior Radio. You're tuned in live this Friday the 13th, Friday, August 13th, 2021, on the one and only Republic Broadcasting Network. And as always, thanks for coming along for the ride. It is an interesting ride, is it not, dear comrades, dear Autobots, dear fellow Autobots? So if you're going to subjugate people, you don't want free-thinking folks. You don't want people who are able to sort of reason things out for themselves. You want to menace people with an endless series of hobgoblins, to borrow from Mencken, perhaps, and use fear. You want to weaponize fear in order to subjugate them. And do all kinds of things. For example, you know, Martin Seligman's work on learned helplessness, you know, you just train all of these natural responses, you condition all of these natural responses out of people so that they won't try to protect themselves or do anything else. They will just hand themselves over to their kidnappers in true Stockholm Syndrome fashion and say, please, kidnapper, take care of me. And who knows, they might even hug their kidnapper and as some folks have observed, those of us who would say, you know what, I don't think the kidnapper really has your best interests at heart, we might become their victim. They might, you know, there might be a lynch mob. There might be pitchforks and torches in the night, only to realize at daybreak that maybe that was a mistake too. So this is sort of where we find ourselves, and I went through some of that earlier this week, and I think maybe we'll continue on today. I had some thoughts, you know, Friday the 13th. Friday the 13th. So it's these are interesting times, very interesting times. I saw something yesterday that was shocking. I thought it was shocking anyway. Maybe it's not. Maybe this is what's happening in some places. A gentleman at a gas station wearing, well, you know, the way I was saying about it, we used to carry guns on our hips. Well, actually, we still do openly in some places. I remember a gentleman who was like a surrogate father to me talking about flying into Billings. This was a long time ago. And the guy, this was for a mechanical insulation job, big job. And he talked about flying into Billings, and the gentleman who met him there was, you know, open carrying on his hip, had a 45 on his hip. And that was remarkable coming from somewhere else. But, you know, if you were there, it wasn't a big deal. So we used to do that kind of thing. And now we carry cell phones, as some have observed. You know, you got a cell phone on your hip. That way you can, you know, record the latest histrionic episode and live stream it on social media. Or, you know, the flash mob incident or whatever, the latest flash mob episode or whatever it is. And apparently we carry personal sized hand sanitizers on our belt too. This is the weirdest thing that I've seen in a long time. I had a little tiny, you know, personal little tiny thing. I mean, it would fit in your pocket. And he was neatly appointed, probably, you know, a technocratic poster boy, probably had a pocket protector and a little clipboard floating around somewhere. But a personal sized hand sanitizer hanging from his belt, as if, you know, he could quick draw any minute and sanitize hands, his own, others, who knows. Very, very strange. And I was really sort of taken aback by that sight. Really, it just left me speechless and stunned. And, you know, obviously I'm thinking in the COVID era, is this it? Is this America? We're just reduced to this now? No particular offense to this gentleman, really. But it's sad and tragic to see that we have been reduced to this. It's not a thing. You're more likely to get the thing if you get the shot or do the things that are, you know, the unscientific, unhealthy recommendations that are coming from these places that are supposed to ostensibly be for our good and benefit. And common sense will tell you otherwise. I'm not a board certified, you know, clinically blah, blah, blah. I'm none of that. And I haven't been sick. Am I just lucky? I'm around people every day from all kinds of places and all walks of life. Like from probably just about every other state in the union. And those people have been around people from probably all over the world. Am I just lucky? Am I just playing Russian roulette, gambling with my health and perhaps even my life? I don't think so. I think common sense tells us that this stuff they're calling science, that they have to stick science on, is probably very unscientific. It goes against everything that, you know, even the other propaganda that we've heard for so long. So I'm thinking about this, and I'm thinking, you know, ladies, would you call this a man? A guy with a little personal hand sanitizer clipped to his belt. you know, like a quick draw personal hand sanitizer. I just thought that was astonishing. Those little, remember the stuff, like if you play in a golf tournament, they give you these kinds of things. One of those is like, you know, 5 pumps worth of hand sanitizer. One of those, a little tiny one. I mean, if you're going to do it, be manly about it and, you know, in Tim Allen style, maybe carry a 5-gallon jug of the stuff on your belt or something like that. Not a little 5, you know, 5-pump sized deal. I thought that was astonishing. I wouldn't call this a man in historical context, you know, an American man. When you start to think about, I mean, if you're familiar, if you know folks who have men who have spent their lives on a ranch or a farm, it's more than just masculinity and so forth. There's a common sense kind of grounding. There's a grounded common sense. You know, you hear things that you don't hear other places. And there's a ruggedness. And, you know, all of that, I think, correlates to a security for those around men like that. He is reliable, trustworthy. He's rugged enough to endure hardship, so to speak, and, you know, difficulties. I mean, I think of Gary Cooper talking about why he left the farm. Basically, it's hard work. You know, you're up at 4. If you're up at 5, if you're out feeding the cows at 5, you're late. That's different. You know, I wish that we had more dairy brownfields around these days. But that's being, you know, systematically and socially engineered out. That's being bred out of us. How many ranchers and farmers are there in America? I don't know, but it's fewer than there were yesterday. It's not something that is in vogue. I mean, people don't do that because it's in vogue. But I think that, you know, and I mean, all of it, you know, the blacksmith or the machine shops of the Motor City that were obliterated after the big auto companies were dismantled and, you know, mostly shipped overseas. But we still assemble a few things here. Yeah, not the same. So I don't think it's a good thing losing these things, and in the process of losing these things, losing these men, this particular type of man. And so, you know, I think it leaves us vulnerable in a variety of ways. This guy with the hand sanitizer on his belt, you know, we keep hearing, well, you know, they can't push too much because there are still 300 million guns in America. Well, I'm pretty sure the guy with hand sanitizer, you know, would scream like a little girl at the sight of a gun or have some kind of adverse reaction. And it seems that's where we're trending. You know, most of, well, you know, again, John Lovell perhaps said it best. Why we are the weakest generation of all time ever to walk the face of the earth, he said. That's his speculation. And, you know, I've mentioned one of my favorite articles on this subject going back, going on 20 years now, from 2003 and 4. Yeah, it's going on 20 years. A generation ago now. And is it better or is it worse? We can reflect now. Terrence Moore's article, Wimps and Barbarians, The Sons of Murphy Brown. Wimps and Barbarians, The Bifurcation Fallacy. Is he a wimp or a barbarian? Well, he should be neither. Wimps and Barbarians, The Sons of Murphy Brown. Today's boys have little sense of how to be men. Right, where are their examples? This guy with the hand sanitizer on our belt, on his belt, no disrespect, sir, not, you know, particularly. But you're soft. Obviously. And again, that's not to be condescending. That's just an observation. It's a patently obvious observation. And is this trending or is the opposite trending? And what does that, you know, how does that bode for America? So, you know, speaking of John Lovell and the Warrior Poet Society, I thought this might be good. You know, from last May, three types of dangerous men. And what do you summarize it as? The what he calls the nefarious or the sinister. And then type number three is what I would call the accidental. And type number two is the hero cast. So here, without further ado, is that. Go ahead, please.
What you can start saving on hunting. All right, what's happening, folks? This video is sponsored by Sportsman's Guide. If you want to shop them and use code WARPOET, you can start saving on hunting stuff, guns, military surplus, all the goodies, that survival gear. You can also get our beloved War Poet pistol, which is everything I wanted in a pistol, and I got it, and it's branded, and it's awesome, and it's built on the MR920 Shadow Systems platform. Anyway, guys, check it out. Sportsman's Guide, code WARPOET. And we'll roll video. Here we go. So yesterday, I was working on a special project with Clint Emerson, and we were talking about the nature of dangerous dudes. By the way, Clint, awesome guy to know. He's the author of 100 Deadly Skills. He's a former SEAL Team 6 guy, an NSA spook. Dangerous guy, beautiful hair, as befitting all team guys. And frankly, he's downright charming. Check him out. Anyway, our conversation started me on a line of thought that I'm picking up with you good people. And it's this: what does a truly dangerous dude look like? Anyway, I started describing some of the ones I know to search out commonalities, but I checked myself a moment when I realized that really there's very different types that look nothing alike. So in this video, I want to talk about the three types of very dangerous people. First off, how can you tell whether someone is a dangerous person? And when I ask the question, I want to distinguish between the three different types of dangerous. The first type of dangerous person is nefarious. They are the bad guy. And they may be dangerous because they aim to injure, and they can do so through an ambush, which doesn't really require them to be particularly strong or skilled or brave. And that means that nearly anyone can be dangerous if they're hostile and they want to cause pain and suffering. And I don't want to talk in this video about this type of dangerous person so much. They suck, and I only hope that they can meet the second type of dangerous man, which is the ones that we'll call our heroes. They're the ones that we'll focus on for most of the scope of this video. But before we jump in, I want to go ahead and move to the third type of dangerous person. The third type of dangerous person is dangerous not because they're strong, but the opposite, because they're weak. And that sounds paradoxical, but bear with me. Now, this person who will betray in their greed or cowardice, or perhaps they don't even mean to hurt consciously, but instead they hurt you accidentally because they're clumsily wrecking everything as they idiotically move through life. Without a backbone, without strong character, without discipline, without courage, this person injures everyone around them. But it's oftentimes excused because they seem to have meant well and are too seemingly pitiable to be charged with any real wrongdoing. When the famous psychologist Jordan Peterson says there is no one more dangerous than a weak man, this is the worm which he's speaking about. You know, I don't really hear many people calling these folks out because they're safeguarded, I think, by society who think it's bullying to call out this weak and bad man. And now just a little reminder that all of the world's sick pedophiles hang out in this category. If you guys want me to do a separate video on this type of dangerous person, let me know down in the comments. But without further ado, I want to push into the next one. Now, now that we've dealt with the first and the third types of dangerous men, let's move into the video scope more and deal with the type of dangerous person all of us should aspire to be. And aspire because the good type of dangerous person is capable of lovingly protecting. They're the sacred guardians of homes and of nations. Truly, it's only under the their shadow that freedom can possibly live. And the Lord himself builds them and sends them to safeguard it, even if you don't actually realize that's what's happening. Agree to disagree. Anyway, just because someone can hit hard or lift heavy or shoot well will not tell you if they're in fact this type of dangerous person. You cannot tell if they're dangerous in the heroic sense. It takes more. Heroes are in fact extremely dangerous, but they're separated from others because they live by a code. They live for and by a higher purpose of some kind. That means normal people are safe around them. Little kids don't need to fear them, and they'll actually grow up to be better adults so long as they can be around the good and the dangerous men. It helps little kids become stronger and bolder adults. Now, I've noticed a few qualities of the most dangerous dudes I know, and I know a lot of them, that are in the good guy camp. And generally, here are the qualities so that you'll be able to know them when you see them, and we can all aspire to kind of be more like these dudes that I look up to. Now, first, and probably the most obvious of all the things I'll say in this category, the good and the dangerous are as tough as nails. They're tougher than a $2 steak. I've always wanted to say that in a video. This is not just like a physical strength, which is, you want that, but it's also a toughness, a mental and emotional toughness as well. Dangerous men have a gritty quality to them that they'd really rather die than quit, which is asinine, but it's true. They don't complain a bunch. They seem impervious to discomfort. They lead disciplined lives and can endure all kinds of pain without really showing much weakness, even though they may fear it. They may even bear pain with a smile. Graveyard humor, I just did a video on graveyard humor recently, but graveyard humor is oftentimes an evidence of mental toughness, as the person who has it has learned to enjoy the comedy in misery and loss. If you don't get it, don't worry about it. We're moving on. Secondly, the good and dangerous can manage fear. And this is really the big one, possibly the most important of all the things on this list. In my world of tactical training classes, the best instructors really harp on fighter mindset because they realize a secret that other folks don't. Even if you can hit hard, lift heavy, shoot fast, all of it's for nothing if fear just shuts you down. So managing fear is a monster. It's the big monster in every fight that we war against. And the enemy is really just a small guy hiding behind it. Now, everyone thinks that we'll rise to the occasion. And I think it's because we can all kind of imagine ourselves winning and acting heroically, but truly it's very uncommon for someone to respond anything like they hoped that they would when real fear shows up. And it's the hero that can manage their breathing, focus their mind on solving that next small problem and taking that next small step. Now, unfortunately, knowing if someone will do well under fear can only be known by watching them. Here's where experience really leaves the pack behind and stand tall. And I'm far less impressed these days by physique and a person's talent compared to someone who I know will work well under fear and chaos. That's the real person that I want beside me. All right, a third quality of this type of dangerous man is they're clever. They can think like a bad guy. They are a creative problem solver. And even under stress, they can understand that the fight is a game. And it doesn't always go to the fastest or the strongest. They need to play the game smart. I've said this too many times to count in our classes. Tactics beat skill. It just does. It's to be in the right place at the right time, doing the right thing. It's seeing what's coming before you get there. It's not ignorantly walking into the ambush. The most dangerous people are brilliant. Now, whether they're psychopaths on the one side or an undercover agent on the other, the essential quality of a dangerous man is they're clever. All right, finally, last thing worth mentioning is skill. These type of dudes, the good and the dangerous, are drawn towards knowing how to break you 100 different ways. And whether that's striking or blades or guns or improvised weapons, the good and the dangerous are constantly wargaming 1,000 different ways to kill you. So the minutia of how to twist a human into a pretzel is fun to this person. There was this funny meme regarding on what jiu-jitsu was. Jiu-jitsu is the gentle art of folding someone's clothes while they're still in them. So good. Anyway, back into it. Shaving a millisecond off a pistol draw is thrilling to the dangerous man. They're trying to become more skilled. The dangerous person not only has that mind that can destroy you, but they have plenty of skills in hand to bring you to a swift end at any time. Guys, as I was just going down this rabbit trail of thinking about the good and the dangerous, what are the main qualities? I'd come up with other qualities, but they would kind of fit in these four main ones as subcategories, so I didn't really include them. And I didn't include character or goodness because that's what makes you one of the good guys in the first place. Otherwise, you would be type one, which is just the nefarious. They're the kind of bad guys. So living that higher purpose, that's an essential piece of it. But I could have missed something, so I want to make sure you guys sound off in the comments down below. What have I missed? Guys, I think it's important for us to look at the second type of dangerous man and really hold them up so that we might become more like them. It is a good thing to be a good, effective protector of people, a good warrior poet, if you will. And we also want to know and have a good, careful study of the first and third type so that we might see them plainly and clearly for what they are, that we would not be taken out by them, and we can also be better protectors as we see folks they're honing in on. So anyway, guys, make sure that you like this video, comment down below because that helps, share the video, subscribe to our YouTube channel, and toggle the notifications to all. Thank you, channel sponsor, and guys,
there you go. Yeah, we've played that before, and I have mixed feelings about it. For perhaps obvious and perhaps not obvious reasons. A lot of this, you know, the sort of punisher attitude and mentality, not saying that that's what John Lovell has or extols or advocates or anything like that, but it's something that it's sort of a, you know, something that a lot of this stuff is infused with, and that's problematic. That leads to somewhere. And so getting back to the rancher, the farmer, you know, these guys harken back to a bygone era, the Greatest Generation, for instance, and what Tom Brokaw, you know, described. I think I agree, you know, this is the Greatest Generation in a certain context and a sort of, you know, that generation was sort of eulogizing the bygone pre-1914, pre-1929 American, in a sense. I'll explain a little bit more when we come back. Stick around. Be right back.
You are tuned in to the Republic Broadcasting Network. Visit our website by going to republicbroadcasting.org.
Tired of being lied to by mass media? It's growing more and more apparent today that news is received less and less through standard media outlets. Even with a growing audience every day, RBN is beginning to direct more efforts into social media. Social media and the use of the internet is fast becoming the primary source of people for news, regardless of demographic. RBN has set out to provide some of the best news on the internet through republicbroadcasting.org and also has begun to use the tools to our advantage by way of social media. Republic Broadcasting is now operating a Facebook page to function as yet another avenue to have our collective voice reach new audiences across not only America, but across the globe as well. The Facebook page features not only news, but also an RBN player to listen to our broadcast. Get involved by visiting facebook.com/republicbroadcasting and liking our page and share it with your friends and family, because you can handle the truth.
Extendivite 7-herb formulation is approved to help maintain cardiovascular health and help lower blood lipid levels in adults. Extendivite is made from hawthorn, garlic, valerian, cayenne, bilberry, ginkgo biloba, and milk thistle. The herbs in Extendivite have been chosen for their ability to help with overall health. Many people have reported improved energy and stamina in just a few months. If you think you could feel just a little bit better, then Extendivite may just be for you. Extendivite is an all-natural supplement. Extendivite is only $69.95 for a 2-month supply. To order, call 1-877-928-8822 or visit heartdrop.com. That's HEARTDROP.com.
Extend your life with Extendivite.
Homeowners, are you in foreclosure, expecting to be served with a foreclosure lawsuit, or suspect your lender has coerced you into an illegal mortgage transaction? A huge number of mortgages made in the last 10 years have legal issues and are possibly defective. State laws and the U.S. Supreme Court have upheld that defective mortgage documents are grounds for foreclosure defense and for counterclaims in favor of the homeowner. If your mortgage has been sold or assigned since closing the loan, it may be defective and you may be paying the wrong party, and the lender may not have standing or the right to foreclose or collect payments under the law. If you would like to know if your mortgage is legal or not, or know if you are paying the right party, we can help. Our initial consultations are free of charge. We are not attorneys. We are legal researchers and work closely with experienced lawyers who know how to help you find the evidence to help you keep your home. Call toll free 1-855-2-KEEP-IT. That's 1-855-2-KEEP-IT today.
Welcome back. All right, so just maybe to explain briefly, for whatever it's worth, you know, sort of echoing John Lovell's point about why we are the weakest generation of all time. And you know, the quote that he mentions by Michael Hoff, which is sort of something that echoes through antiquity. Hard times make strong men create good times create weak men create hard times. It's interesting that, you know, you go back and you look at some of these things, these so, you know, allegedly or ostensibly spurious documents, the protocols, the Dusseldorf rules, et cetera, et cetera. And there's an effort to attack the nuclear family or the home, you know, a man and a woman, a husband and a wife, and children, you know, to make that seem bizarre and to emancipate, quote unquote, you know, women in particular, and to create that psychological confusion and turmoil within women. I don't need a man. No, you don't, but you want one in there because you're wired to, you know, that's how you're wired. And so it creates this turmoil and, you know, conflict and anxiety and a struggle that is not really consciously identified. And so then what happens, you know, and now in this inflationary scheme that we live in, it's becoming painfully obvious that it's increasingly difficult for, you know, folks to, I mean, when you could have a cohesive family unit instead of conflict, and it would be less expensive, more advantageous, beneficial generally to do that versus this, you know, these varieties of outcroppings of other things, whatever they may be. And that sounds kind of vague, but you know, there are so many little tangents that we could go off on. Rollo Tomasi's Rational Male, you know, like, no offense to him or John Lovell, I don't mean to sound disparaging. I'm not trying to be disparaging, but there is a sort of latent thread of will to power in all of this, you know, a sort of Nietzschean, Freudian sort of will to power thread. And it's the, you know, it culminates in the live by the sword, die by the sword attitude. And so that is a particularly nihilistic bent. From Nietzsche's Will to Power, a nihilist is a man who judges of the world as it is, that it ought not to be, and of the world as it ought to be, that it does not exist. According to this view, our existence, action, suffering, willing, feeling, has no meaning. The pathos of in vain is the nihilist's pathos, at the same time as pathos and inconsistency on the part of the nihilists. So it's kind of a, you know, stoicism is popular these days. If you follow guys like, I mean, I don't even want to say this, but I suppose I will, you know, for better or worse, it's definitely for worse. But, you know, you follow that whole Rollo Tomasi crowd and you hear about these things like MGTO and stuff like this, just weird stuff. And it has a very nihilistic flavor to it, a very nihilistic will to power sort of, you know, it's like asceticism and stoicism, you know, it's the creeping progression of that, which also reminds me, speaking of weak men, the assault on ruggedness, and the rugged individual has been under threat for over 100 years, particularly here in America, vilified and whatever. So now you have all of these folks who are, you know, working out and doing all these things and all this fancy gear and diet and, you know, science behind it. And people have asked, I mean, I've heard people say, yeah, but no one was like this in the past, right? I mean, this is a new thing, right? Nobody was that physically fit or that, you know, chiseled or whatever in the past, right? And you know, I've actually had that conversation, and my response most recently was, go back and look at Charles Bronson in Run of the Arrow in 1957, just shredded, and see what you think then. Go back and watch, you know, any of Clint Walker's stuff, or, you know, these kinds of guys. But, you know, and Walker was a guy who joined the Merchant Marines at 17 years old. And so it's a different thing, you know, this ruggedness that doesn't, it's not showy. But, you know, I would say Clint Walker sort of represents the cast of, cast with an E, of folks who are, you know, tough as nails, so hard that, you know, this guy's, I don't know, the ranch guys that aren't, when they're not, you know, working on the ranch, they're bending quarters with their fingers kind of thing, you know, just tough. Not that they would do that, but, you know, tough and rugged, different kind of thing. And so we used to have that. That used to be considered normal and great. And I think that provides, as much as 300 million guns, I think that provides a cover of safety and security and protection for America. And so, you know, I get back to the misgivings of, I mean, I agree with most, if not all, of what John Lovell is saying about three types of dangerous men. However, it's funny how, you know, we're starting to gravitate toward, you know, the Clint Emersons. He mentions, you know, sitting down with Clint Emerson, 100 Deadly Skills, Escape the Wolf, Violent Nomad, that kind of stuff. And that all is rooted in something, you know. Do we need to define terms and as far as what bad guy and good guy is? Not saying Clint Emerson or anyone is a bad guy per se, but, you know, there are issues, and certain things are manifesting themselves increasingly in certain ways. There is, for example, the article series that I mentioned, and I don't mean to be vague, you know, I just don't want to sound like I'm trampling per se, or I don't want to be crude and bluntly offensive. The article, yeah, series, The Crimes of SEAL Team 6, and this is heresy, in some places, Matthew Cole's article, and then, you know, he's discredited, well, he's, you know, part of a group that's doing certain things to lure people in, to say certain things that, you know, in a non-scrupulous fashion or whatever. I don't know about that. But, you know, this article, the Crimes of SEAL Team 6, which became, you know, interviews and other things and follow-up articles and stuff, you know, that really sort of centers around the concept of, again, this is offensive and I don't want to mention it, but for, you know, for context, you know, the article and the whole discussion centers around this thing called canoeing, which is, you know, as a practice, particularly odious, I would say. People say, well, you know, we're talking about terrorists. Yeah, well, let's define terms. And let's go back a little bit and explore the history. Let's maybe, you know, it doesn't begin there, but let's start perhaps with Operation Cyclone and see that there was a nefarious sort of clandestine effort that was very intentional, even though there is plausible, it, you know, whether it's fraught with plausible deniability or not, you know, Brzezinski was very candid in that 1998 La Nouvelle Observateur interview. We didn't force the Soviets into Afghanistan, but we created a situation. We created a situation, made it virtually impossible for them not to intervene. I read yesterday from the Wikipedia entry for propaganda in China. You ask the average American, is Chinese propaganda in an effort to, you know, the thought work and the systematic engineering and re-engineering of, you know, the average Chinese folks, you know, is that a good thing? Re-education camps and stuff like that? Oh, no, that's horrible. Okay, well, how do you feel about the Chinese government and Chinese foreign propaganda officials taking cues from the Blair government and the, you know, Tony Blair and Bush too? How do you feel about that? Oh, well, but that's different because we have to, those are just things you've been told so that you can put away the mental controversy so that you won't arrive at the fact that this is arguably a bigger problem. You know, pirates and emperors, basically. So these guys are terrorists. Yeah, but who created the terrorists? So many articles have been written. You know? Forever. I mean, Frontline PBS did a series on it in November 2001, for Pete's sake. And they told the whole story, really. They did. Norm Dixon's September 18, 2001 article, 1 week after September 11, 2001, How the CIA Created Osama Bin Laden, over at Green Left. Issue 465. How the CIA Created Osama Bin Laden. It was mainstream news. Robin Wright's article in the LA Times that, what's his name? Brian Walsh, is it? And Gary Webb talked about in 1998 on C-SPAN's Washington Journal. It was mainstream news. You know, Reagan's freedom fighters, frenemies, and now the term frenemy, I mean, when it became a word, when it was recognized in dictionaries, I said, this is a harbinger. Said it on this broadcast. Frenemy is a particularly, you know, useful, plausibly deniable term. Yesterday's friend is today's enemy is tomorrow's friend, and vice versa is kind of how I've described that. So we need to define terms. And the problem is that with all of this talk goes a certain kind of turning a blind eye to things that we should probably pay a lot closer attention to. And in the process of turning that blind eye, we are lending ourselves or giving ourselves over to the allure of this will to power nihilistic bent. Live by the sword, die by the sword. You know what? As long as I have a bigger sword and I can wield it faster, then it's okay. You go back to the World War II generation, they weren't like that. They were not weak, they were not soft by any stretch of the imagination. But they were not nihilistic either. They did not have the Nietzschean will to power bent. And historically, as I've been trying to explain recently in particular, that leads to somewhere, you know? And Jordan Peterson seems to be sort of infused with this Nietzschean, you know, thus spake Zarathustra kind of stuff. It's in there. Thus spoke Zarathustra. No particular offense. You know, I appreciate much of Jordan Peterson's work, but this nihilistic will to power bent is a problem. It's poison in simple terms. And it's a, you know, creeping gradualist continuum that ends up somewhere, and we saw kind of where it ends in a certain context during the World War II era, and it wasn't good. And of course, perhaps above all, it reminds me of that letter from Pike to Mazzini, August 15, 1871. We shall unleash the nihilists and the atheists. We all are being conscripted to this? Wow. Stick around. We'll be right back.
It dominates the American opinion. Finding independent voices that counter this avalanche is becoming increasingly difficult. With the endless corruption running rampant throughout our government, independent voices are needed more than ever to battle the offensive against our freedoms and liberties. As a listener of RBN, no one understands this concept better than you. Now it's up to you to do your part. The time has come for you to take action and begin broadcasting the truth to hundreds or thousands of people every month. Sound impossible? Quite the contrary. With pointed slogans from LibertyStickers.com, you can reach countless sleeping Americans unaware that they live in a real-life wonderland. LibertyStickers.com has a huge inventory of political bumper stickers and messages that reflect the truth about our government, our politicians, and the future of America. With so many in stock, there's one perfect for you. Visit us today at LibertyStickers.com. Again, that's LibertyStickers.com. Do your part. Your voice is important. Let it be heard.
The reviews for Extendivite are amazing. Amazon customer: it's amazing. I just ordered my second bottle. In 1 month, my blood pressure dropped significantly. I no longer get chest pain after I exercise. The reviews are spot on. My target is to get off of BP meds, and if it keeps going like this, I see a light at the end of the tunnel. Amazon customer: Extendivite works great. This product has made my blood pressure and cholesterol stable. I highly recommend it. Amazon customer: excellent herbal formula. I've been using it to keep my cardiovascular system fine-tuned. Extendivite is only $69.95 for a 2-month supply. To order, call 1-877-928-8822 or visit heartdrop.com. That's HEARTDROP.com.
Extend your life with Extendivite.
Here at Republic Broadcasting Network, we have been building our online store. Well, we have been focusing on bringing you the best talk show host in the country. Here at Republic Broadcasting Network, we also want our listeners to have products they can use every day and in times of emergency. We have added new products each week to our store. Your support of this network, plus products at the best prices, is a win-win situation. Check out our new store. Go to our website, republicbroadcasting.org, and click on the online store located at the top of our website. Together, we can continue to grow RBN and help our listeners prepare for the future. Go to republicbroadcasting.org and click on our online store, or call us
800-724-2719 extension 3. 800-724-2719 extension 3.
Welcome back. It's an interesting deal, you know, discussion that we could get into. It could go on for quite some time. What do you do? You know, you have the Spanglers of the world telling us, you know, that the Western world is collapsing. Nietzsche, you know, saying the same thing, the world, Western world's disintegration of traditional morality. It's not the disintegration so much as the organized and orchestrated systematic engineering of it away. The evisceration of it. You know, Nietzsche, you know, nihilism applied to both the modern trends of value destruction expressed in the death of God, as well as what he saw as the life-denying morality of Christianity. So, you know, Nietzsche was one of those guys that departed from the faith, as the Bible says. And so it's interesting that these are the people, these are the, you know, and it's not everything. Again, you know, reducing these people, the Nietzsches, the Freuds, the, you know, et cetera, et cetera, at all, you know, reducing them to these sound bites is not fair either. But it's interesting that we study these people, and, or, you know, that young people like students in university, speaking of the Enlightenment and the Italian Enlightenment in particular, you know, prostrating ourselves before the tree of the knowledge of good and evil, this concept of university, to produce the universal Renaissance man. Uh-huh, sure. Is it working? Should we maybe stop and take stock a little bit and see if it's working? And so when you hear that the universities, you know, in the most hallowed Ivy League halls, the highest levels, they are embracing sort of an antichrist spirit, basically, the ungodly, nihilistic, cultural Marxist bent. They're embracing it, extolling its virtues. It shouldn't, I mean, if you understand the history of this concept of university, it shouldn't really be surprising. It should be expected. This is exactly in keeping with the spirit of this concept of university, to produce the Renaissance man, so to speak. It always had a godless spirit. You know, it is the perfectibilist dream. We can grab all of these things and these pieces and stuff, and we can make him perfect. And in nihilistic, you know, Nietzschean, particularly Nietzschean fashion, maybe if we just plunge him into utter chaos, and again, the cultural Marxist bent, which is why, you know, the Heidegger contingent leans on Nietzsche et al. Maybe we can just plunge him into utter chaos and depravity, and that's the road to perfection. It's insane. And so anything that sort of goes along with that should, I think, be scrutinized, to say the least. Second hour coming up. Stick around. We'll be right back after this short break.
Hey, gang. Patrick Slattery here with an important message that is pertinent to anyone who shops for groceries, eats food, or just has an inquisitive mind like myself. What I'm about to introduce you to is a segment of our food culture that has been kept so low profile to the American public that virtually no one is aware of how dominant it is on our refrigerator and cupboard shelves. What I'm talking about is the kosher certification industry and a new app, Koshertified, that delivers a comprehensive education on all aspects regarding this little-known practice. After reviewing this app, I found that it is useful for practically anyone who purchases food, regardless of their religious faith or identity. Its database of products not kosher certified is a win-win convenience for all food-conscious people. So why not check out thekosherquestion.com or click on the link at nationalbugle.com and see how modifying your grocery shopping with the Co-Certified app can make a huge difference for your future.
You can't handle the truth!
You're listening to Republic Broadcasting Network. Visit republicbroadcasting.org.